Hello everyone and welcome to today's Charter Digital podcast, our first and fresh recording of 2023. I'm Lisa and together with the whole Charter Digital team, we'd like to wish you a very happy and prosperous new year. We're delighted to welcome you for another episode. We're seeing an increasing number of people listening to our podcast, so thank you. Don't hesitate to follow us on social media, LinkedIn and Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @charitydigiorg. Now, on to today's conversation, which is all about language. In a work of charities, language can be a tool for many things, from building connections to tackling injustice. In today's podcast, we explore how to use your words online, including tone, voice, inclusivity, and more importantly, impact. Our esteemed guests will use our very varied experience to explore some of the key considerations for charities to communicate more intentionally and effectively online. Today, I'm joined by our content editor, Ewan Mark Jones, our content lead, Laura Stanley, and our communication executive, Grace Monnery. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me today. Let's dive straight in. So obviously, we have the content team with us and the comms team. So how do you achieve an appropriate voice and tone for charity comms? And I don't know who wants to speak. Maybe Johan.
Well, I think something we're probably going to mention throughout the podcast is a house style, which is just a place to consolidate all your information in one place that you can share across your organization. So I think in our house style, for example, house styles are a moving document. It's you should be forever updating it. But we have a tone of voice. It's good to have a mission statement in there and to consolidate your values and make sure they're represented in that house style. So tone of voice is one at Charity Digital. If you've read any of our content, you'll see that it's quite playful. It's informal, but we always present ourselves as experts. That's kind of where we're trying to find that middle ground where we don't want to lumber you with too much technical information, but we also want you to, we want it to be accessible to anyone so that they can learn. So it's about finding that balance. I think in terms of different platforms, I think different approaches are necessary. So you should establish a tone of voice for your content broadly, and that should apply for your webinars, your podcasts, almost across the board. Of course, it's never going to be so stringent or strict that you can't deviate from it somewhat, but you almost have it in mind and then you go from there. That's always a good approach. But different platforms, I suppose, when you're on socials, it's worth considering. Different platforms demand different tones of voice. So you wouldn't use the same tone of voice for TikTok that you use for LinkedIn, for example. I mean, TikTok, you'd imagine, would be more playful. LinkedIn would be more formal, basically conveying information in a pretty, not bland way, but using the language that's persuasive, but at the same time, all above board and everything like that. And then Twitter, I think, is sort of up for definition. I think you can go sarcastic if you want to. I don't see much value in that personally, but you can. So it's about establishing your tone of voice, making sure it's appropriate to your values as well. And that obviously includes your mission. So what I mean by that is you would have different tone of voices depending on the people you are serving. I don't think it would be appropriate for certain charities to adopt a playful tone of voice considering the subject matter that they're dealing with. But a lot of charities can. And I think sometimes there's a lot of leeway there when, even when you're dealing with a serious subject matter, you can still adopt more playful tones. It's just about doing it in the right way. And the way to check that, I think, is always listen to your audience, understand where they're coming from, and run it past your internal teams. I mean, we do this in the content team all the time. You know, there's three of us and we'll just sort of throw it to each other going, is this okay? Is this an acceptable thing? And we'll work with email people who work on socials, and they might throw it our way as well, going, do you think the language we've used here is correct or appropriate or, you know, and the whole main point about language, and I'll shut up in one second, but the main point about language is that it's ever evolving, it's constantly evolving, and it reflects social changes. That means you're going to get stuff wrong. I get stuff wrong, and I do it as a job, and I read about it in my spare time. I get it wrong constantly because these things happen, and it's about having those second checks, having someone look at your writing and making sure that they may have information you don't have. So it's okay to get it wrong. The important point is you address it once you've got it wrong, and you are cognizant of evolutionary changes within language. Anyway, that's that.
Well, thank you. That's very comprehensive, Johan. our other content colleague, Laura, you definitely have other element probably to add.
Probably. just to add to that, I think just think about the value that each post is having. So if you're going to try and be funny, like there's a rule when you're posting sort of memes, and that you should probably, the most successful memes don't have a call to action like a buy or a subscribe, because they're just a way of deepening a relationship with your followers rather than actually they sort of makes them look cynical. So not everything has to have a call to action or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But if you can justify it and like justify your communications or why you're posting that in that tone, then I think that's a reason for posting it, isn't it? Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yeah.
I feel like users want to feel like the accounts they follow add value to their time on social media. So like whether that's it could be educating, informing, but you're probably not going to be an entertainment account as well. So also don't feel like you have to be funny because mm-hmm. largely people don't want you for that. Like they want updates on what your charity is doing. Or I think we saw it quite a lot when the Queen died, for example. Mm-hmm. Like some charities obviously had an obligation to post about that because that she was their patron or a member mm-hmm. of the royal family was their patron. But it's not important for everyone to talk about that matter because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people already doing that. And if it's not relevant, then you're just talking for nothing. Mm. And I think just make sure every communication has a purpose, and then you can't really go too far wrong. Mm. And then also just risk analyze everything. So that's part of what Johan was saying about sharing it with other members of your team, because they will likely pick up on something if something's accidentally, you know, an innuendo or something. Someone else is likely to pick
that
up. Could
you give us an example?
I cannot. So just think about like what's the worst case scenario if we post this, or like how could someone misconstrue this? Try and put yourself in other people's shoes, and I think also that's a good way of catching something before you've posted it. And yeah, if it does go wrong, which it's likely to because we all post quite a lot, just make sure you have your way of communicating that you have done wrong.
Exactly. and only adjust. No, but absolutely. And as your social media guru, Grace, you definitely have, maybe you've experienced some instance of post or communications.
Yeah, so I'll sort of just take it back to tone of voice mm-hmm. for a second, just expanding on that for those people who may not have got to that stage of branding or their communications. It can be a tricky thing to try and define your charity's tone of voice is. Mm-hmm. So the best way to think about it is it's the way that you get your messages across. You communicate your values and your purpose and how your charity aims to achieve its mission. So for that, there are three things that it needs to be. It needs to be distinctive. Mm-hmm. So you want to get across what it is that you do and what you're hoping to achieve and what makes you individual or what's special about your charity. For example, there are many cancer charities out there, but some tend to focus on the medical research side of things, whereas others focus on supporting those in the community who have received a diagnosis. So the tone of voice for those two different charities, although they focus on the same area, the same cause, the tone of voice is going to be very different. And then you also need to be relatable to your audience. So again, no matter what your audience is, you want them to be able to relate to your cause, to be able to come to you and know what they're getting. So if I am seeking support, I would like my charity to seem empathetic and caring mm-hmm. and knowing mm-hmm. that is reflected in all of their communications. So being uplifting and positive, as opposed to more formal and clinical in the way that they communicate. Mm-hmm. And I think the charity Mind does this really well. So for instance, they did some research and found that the formal language that they were using, such as mental distress or Mind services, that was actually preventing people from really engaging with the charity and came across as quite clinical. So now, sort of shifting their copywriting to involve much more warmth and compassion, even whilst talking about difficult subjects, mm-hmm. It's actually found to be much more engaging for their audience that they're trying to reach. And then the final point to think about is, like you mentioned earlier, is consistency. So you want to be consistent across your platforms, so that your users, your beneficiaries, know that it's you who's talking to them. I agree that there you can have variation across different platforms, like how you would vary how you talk to a friend compared to, say, your parents. So there is room there for variations.
No, definitely. Yeah, as an example, that sprung to mind. But some charities that have a presence on TikTok and then another presence on LinkedIn, for instance, you obviously have a different audience there. And if you are lucky enough or able to have some maybe user generated content that you can share on TikTok, is a bit more appropriate to have that kind of tone and interaction with your audience on TikTok rather than LinkedIn being a little bit more formal or showcasing your work or your impact in a different manner. So yeah, that's great. Thank you very much to the three of you for your insights. And obviously, as you know, to get back to some of your points, I wanted to move on to the sort of inclusivity and how do you remain engaging via language and how do you, as a charity, how do you ensure that happens? I don't know who wants to start.
Yeah, I can jump in again. Yeah. I think one thing to start, almost caveat everything I'm saying, is broadly I would say that I apply this more to written content. It's actually more difficult with recorded content such as this, but particularly webinars, which is live recorded, because if I say something wrong now, we'll take a break and I'll start again. But with webinars particularly, I mean, you are live and people are watching you. But with written content, I think you can have a purposeful approach to it that you don't get with those other forms. And what I mean by that is you can take every sentence and you can assess it. And so just think about how language, the connotations of language, both positive and negative, are the essential things you're looking for. The one that I notice most sort of often in daily life now is mental health, with words such as crazy, mad, insane, all these words, and they're used in inappropriate ways, particularly in spoken language. You hear people say it all the time in a positive or negative light, and the connotations are far removed from what we actually mean when we use those words. It's an example that was worth saying simply because you should, being cognizant of how that might actually affect people with mental illnesses is not something I'd once considered. And once someone brought it to me, it becomes almost suddenly really obvious that that's problematic. And that learning journey is essentially what you should be aware of. So one thing I'd say is in-house style, pick up on some important points. So for example, protected characteristics, age, disability, gender reassignment, marriage and civil partnership, pregnancy and maternity, race, religion or belief, sex and sexual orientation. Look at those and how you should talk about those things when you talk about them. There's plenty of style guides available online that deal with accessibility and inclusivity. So have a read of those. And to be honest, steal the ones that you think are, steal, you know, the information from there. That's what I've done. And it would be useful to have just ways in which your charity should talk about particularly the things that are most important to you. But broadly, if you're a content organization, particularly mental health, poverty, disadvantage, and other elements that may, where you need to be more cautious about your language, just think about those. Ask across your team and see if anyone wants to contribute to that. Bring people in. You know, you can't talk about inclusivity and then exclude people. That should be quite obvious. And then places like Mind, Grace mentioned earlier, but ACS is an American Chemistry Society, I think. Weirdly, they have actually a brilliant house style on, which helps with accessibility and so on and so forth. And then there's the little sort of more sort of precise things you need to be, which is one, be specific at times and be non-specific at times. So for example, you usually not use a single label for a diverse group of individuals, and you should name smaller specific groups. It gives them visibility. Whereas if you sort of, I mean, one thing people sometimes do is they say, instead of saying black people, when referring to black people, they may refer to people of color. And that's actually, firstly, inaccurate, and it's exclusive. So, but then on the other hand, you do want to sometimes include people by being non-specific. So for example, people with disabilities, if you are talking about them, say, restricted access to people in with disabilities, you then don't want to be specific with that. So think about it, and it's a judgment call. You know, you should do it in the way that elevates people and gives visibility to those communities or those people in the best way possible. And the other thing is, just as a final reminder, I won't keep going, but as a final reminder, I would just say always listen to the communities, the people who you are addressing or you're speaking about. Yeah. And if they have concerns about the way you're using language, because what I said, I believe to be right, I may be wrong, and that's okay. You're, again, we've reiterated this a few times. The problem is never you making mistakes, unless you're purposely making mistakes and not listening. The problem is not listening. So listen to the communities, listen to people you're addressing, and read about them. All that, it's available online. You don't have to wait for someone to email you. Google it.
Yeah. So many charities have this guidance. Scope has a lot of guidance on how to make your website accessible, for example, and including a lot of stuff about how they've made their own website accessible. And I'm trying to, there's a charity called Ambitious About Autism that has ways of how to talk about it in articles and things like that. So I think, most charities will have this sort of guidance, and then you can say this, we've worked with this charity, this is how we're, you can put it in your style guide, basically.
Yeah, it gains
and then that adds the consistency and also just transparency. So if people want to talk about that, they say, oh, actually that doesn't reflect my values, and they can address that with you, and it makes it a more of a dialogue and less an emotional thing where you're like, you've talked about me wrong or something like that, if that makes sense. Also, I think it's interesting that there isn't a universal web accessibility legal requirement in the UK. There is for public sector bodies, like government websites and NHS trusts and stuff, but there's nothing for that's applicable to charities. But I think given the breadth of people that charities talk to and that they exist for the public good and everything, they probably, like, we should lead on this as a sector. So I think there's little things to think about, like the new language adaptations, I guess, like emojis. I'm a big fan of emojis. I use them in all my emails. I've decided in my old age to lean into them in my emails, but it's important to not like use them to replace text, because they will trip up e-readers and things like that. So if you use them to replace like a bit of text, people won't understand the full meaning of what you're saying, and it can, you know, just sort of mystify things a bit more. And then there's also putting alt text on your images as well, which means that people can see what your images are, describing what's actually in the image, so that helps e-readers as well. So just little things as well as the big language parts as well.
If
I could just build on that, what Johan was talking about, inclusivity. So another essential thing for communicators to focus on is representation. So the best way to try and represent the people you're supporting is by involving them. So this could be as simple as reaching out to your supporters via social media, or potentially creating a little focus group. The RNID are a great example of this. They've created a content community to help create accessible language. And that just helps you know that the guidance you're taking from online, which hopefully would be reputable sources, is actually in line with how those that you support feels about that language. You might feel, for example, that your quote or your slogan is really uplifting, but actually some of these phrases can seem to be quite demeaning to those that you're trying to lift up. I know there was a great example from the charity Breaking Barriers. So their head of communications said that they used to use the common phrase rebuilding lives, which to untrained eye you'd think, oh, that sounds quite nice, but they found that their community actually found it quite demeaning, and switched it instead to build new lives. So it's a subtle change, but it actually was found to be much more effective when communicating with their audience. So yeah, don't neglect those people that you're trying to support in actually informing the language that you use and what is deemed appropriate and non-offensive.
I also think take the time to look at those different meanings. Like, don't rush into saying this is what our motto is or this is what our slogan's going to be, because I think if you take that time, you will see the different ways it can be construed a lot more. I'm thinking, one of my friends works in strategy, and they often do focus groups around like names for businesses and stuff, but it takes a long time, and they all sit around a room and say what, and you know, think about what those words mean. And I just think that's a great way of picking up problems, like issues like the rebuilding lives and things. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, going back to one of your points, Laura, in terms of alt text, I've seen that quite a lot on social media posts, especially on Instagram. Yes, I'm a bit old school. Everything now happens on Snapchat and TikTok. So I don't know about these ones, but I know on Instagram there's you can have loads of alternative text or description of what the post is all about for people that have whichever learning or any other disabilities. So that's it shows that you can be inclusive and it doesn't need to be complicated. Mm-hmm. It can be, you know, it can seem a little bit daunting, especially as you have loads of things to juggle, you know, your donors, your beneficiaries, the rest of the audience. So obviously that leads us to also, how, you know, juggling all of that, how can organizations communicate with, you know, still sticking to their values in mind? Because that can be maybe a minefield to be sure to communicate properly. So I don't know who wants to jump on that one. Maybe Laura, you can, have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think, and this is such a basic point, write them down. Mm. Like, make sure that everyone knows them. Put them somewhere visible in your office, or have them somewhere like that is people can access, because I think they need to be front and center of everything you do. I read a really interesting article today about how actually they're meant as an accountability thing. They're meant to be quite a painful thing that you should be thinking about them all the time, and they should prevent you from posting something because it prevents you from taking the easy route, basically. So I think make sure that that people are conscious of them when they communicate. And I don't have an end.
I can go if you want.
I'll just finish that last. I'll just take that last sentence. Just make sure that people are really conscious of using them when they communicate, and using them to back up what they say, because that way it will be authentic.
Absolutely. I agree, Laura. And I think, yes, Grace, you heard.
Yeah, I can add to that.
Yeah.
So kind of taking it back to where we started with your charity's tone of voice. So it's really important that your tone of voice reflects your charity's purpose and your mission. Which is an easy way that you can incorporate your values within that. Mm. So thinking about, are we a charity that wants to educate people? Yes. Are we a charity that wants to offer support? Are we a charity that is providing something else?
I've got an example later on, so yeah, carry on.
Yeah, are you a charity that wants to offer support to your beneficiaries? Are you a charity that wants to educate people about a certain cause? Think about that when you come to developing your tone of voice, and then that can ensure that every time that you communicate with people, you're really communicating your values and your purpose. So, like I mentioned earlier, whether you take a more formal tone, if your focus is on research, or if you want to be a more empathetic and welcoming voice for those who are offering support services, that's a surefire way to ensure that your values are sort of highlighted within your communications.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I can just jump in, a great way to showcase your values is when you sometimes have negative comments on social media and on under some of your posts, and you have to credit many teams from the likes of the Red Cross or the boat, and I forgot the name of the charity that received quite a lot of negative feedback and negative comments under their Facebook post, because people were having xenophobic comments, and they stuck to their values. Yes. And their values were we help humans. We help humans. Crossing whatever you know, we're not supporting illegal channel crossing, but we're just making sure that humans do not die whilst crossing the channel. So, again, sticking to your values and to the right tones, even though you can have very negative comments and maybe negative public opinion, is also something that charities have to deal with a lot. And we can learn a lot from some of these comms team. I don't know whether you wanted to also add.
That comes back to the justification that I was saying earlier. Like, if you can justify it, and your values are a really great way of doing that, like point people to your, have them on your website, say, look, well, we've always said this is what we are.
Yeah.
Like, that done.
sticking to your guns, essentially.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
I think the examination of the relationship between the charity mission and the language choices, and that relationship should never waver. Mm-hmm. The language choices should, because of course we talk about language as an evolutionary thing, and I think that's important to be cognizant of. So in terms, I'll probably put a lot of emphasis on, like Lisa said, with the RNLI as a good example, yes. Because you could, the way we talk about refugees or the way we talk about people who are seeking asylum, I think it's, if I worked for the RNLI, I would be hyper-conscious of everything I'm talking about within that. And it shows you cannot get everything right with language, as we've said before, and that's okay. But I think being very, very hyper-aware of your own mission and the language choices surrounding that. If you're a climate charity, for example, you can opt for language choices. This doesn't always have to be in the realm of what's politically correct or what's the right thing to say or what's the more welcoming thing to say. It can just be choosing a thing that's more scientifically accurate. I mean, recently we've been internally talking about the difference between global warming and global heating. And the Guardians opted for global heating because it's a more accurate scientific denomination. And so I think, you know, it's wider than just what might cause offense, or it's wider than what's more welcoming to people. It's everything. It's all your language and how that brings people into conversations in a not just a welcoming sense, but to be as accurate as possible too. Another thing to mention maybe is how you communicate. So we often talk about inclusivity. Perhaps one way to generate more inclusivity is actually after a few forms. So what I mean by that is you might put it in a video as well as an article, which gives more people access. Of course, there's an audio component to that. You should add subs. Is it subs?
Captions
those videos, which brings more people in. And you know, even little things you see on the, I mean, probably slightly pretentious example, but on the New Yorker now, they always often have recordings of the articles themselves, sometimes read by people. That's another way to include, and also it's doubly beneficial because of course people like to consume content in different ways, so you're basically getting a higher readership while keeping inclusivity and accessibility in mind. So I'd say those things. In terms of something Laura said, which was the write them on the wall, the values. I mean, that's what our house style's for. Laura does also work with our house style.
It is printed on all the walls of the office.
You don't have to write Dorked. On your walls.
With the wallpaper is our house style.
Put it in your house style. And there's the house style should be accessible to everyone in your organization, and they should read it. And if they are not... So you have your missions there, you have your mission statement, you have your tone of voice, you have everything there. And that is reflected in the entirety of the house style. So it's all in one place that everyone should use to go forward. One thing you could do is this is something, for example, The Guardian, I know they do that. We don't really have capacity to do it because we're a small organization, but bigger organizations do, particularly bigger content organizations. But they would have word choices. We use this instead of this. We use this to represent this. It's one of the reasons it's such a resource, it drains quite a lot of resources, is because they're ever evolving. So it has to be reviewed constantly. And some of these are massive. I mean, there's one online, the Guardian Observer Style Guide, is actually includes all these choices where you should actually opt for one word instead of the other. I mean, if you were to read it, it would take you hours and hours and hours. So obviously with a 3-person content team, it's not plausible for us to have such a detailed, because we wouldn't be able to write anything else. Just keeping all that stuff in mind, I think, is always a good thing. And so maybe for a smaller organization, it's about thinking about the words that are often used based on your mission and getting those down and making their right. And sorry, one more point. I'm rambling a little bit.
No, go on.
But the last point is user research. We've said it 5 times in different forms, but ask your audience what they'd like. Email them and say, you can even ask, what words would you prefer to describe and why, because I think why. And then you do have to make a choice in the end, and it's not going to make everyone happy. I mean, we know words that have changed in connotation recently, and older generations, LGBT plus is a good example. By the way, Stonewall have a really good style choice. Whatever that thing is. They have a really good one. But the point is, words in the LGBT plus community have shifted connotations over the years, and it still offends some of the older people in the generation because they remember the negative connotations that came with certain words, and they still don't feel comfortable. But organizations make their own decisions, and they have to make the decision, and you're not always going to please everyone, unfortunately. It's an unfortunate fact, but Yeah, sorry for rambling.
No, didn't at all. I think it's just, it doesn't always have to be an internal thing either. I'm just thinking we've recently launched our climate action campaign and we're publishing a glossary to talk about the terms. And that's not necessarily an organisational thing, like these are the words we're using. But it's just to define some of the words that are going to be used in our articles. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think if people can refer to that, that's going to be really helpful for your organisation. And also, put it in your media packs, right? Mm. So then you can, like, when The Guardian is talking about your, you can make sure they're talking about it in the right way, in the way that you want them to represent you. And that means that's part of your communication as well. Mm. And it just ensures that the language doesn't get skewed, I think. So
But have you got...
Well, no, but that's great. And obviously, like you said, in any press release or in any sort of communications, that's a great way as well of communicating, again, these values and your mission through the words that you're choosing. And obviously be open for it to evolve over time. But I think this is, we're getting to the end of that very interesting conversation. We're hoping that it brought you some insight. It might feel a little bit overwhelming. We'd say a good way or a good first step would be to have another look at your mission, at your values, and what who you serve, the beneficiaries you're serving, and then start from there, and then see like an onion. So the core of the onion is what you do, what your mission, and who your beneficiaries are, and then expand and see what sort of conversations and the type of language you want to use and adopt. And as always, it is an evolving thing. Yes, there might be some mistakes that you're going to make, but don't worry. Mm-hmm. It's all about learning. And certainly at Charter Digital, we're also learning.
So
we're really hoping that it's given you some ideas. Thank you very much to all our guests.
Thank you
for all your insights. Thank you to all our listeners for tuning in. Next podcast is a very exciting one, as Laura alluded to it. And as you may already know, we've launched our Charter Digital Climate Action Campaign. So we're preparing tons of contents, whether that's podcasts, articles or videos, aimed at supporting the charity sector in the fight against climate change, and a lot of resources on how to be more sustainable. So our next podcast will cover exactly that, and list what charities have been doing regarding climate change and sustainability. So we really hope you tune in. And in the meantime, please follow us on social media. See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.